The Jason Rant Show.
Jason Rant hosts a radio show in Seattle, and he has, as always, the details for us exclusively.
Jason Rant, our Seattle guy, is with us now.
Jason Rant, always great to have you in focus. Thank you.
Hey, Jason, I think you're all right, and thanks for being on the show.
An update on what's happening in your Pacific Northwest.
State Senator Mark Mullett is running for governor. He's a Democrat. Should we consider voting for him? He's going to be on the show to make the case. Target ended up backing an organization pushing for the demilitarization of the U.S. Oh, and to just give up a whole bunch of land and then, oh, just knock down Mount Rushmore for being a symbol of white supremacy. We're going to get into that. Plus, Josh Hammer, my friend, started Jews Against Soros to point out Jews can call out George Soros and it's not anti-Semitic. He'll explain on this hour of the Jason Rant Show. So let's dive in.
The monologue.
Few news stories out of the world of Washington politics. One funny story. I think I have to lead with this, especially because we have Mark Mullett coming on at 5:30. Bob Ferguson is thirsty for attention and support, and he sees Mark Mullett as a threat, and I think he should. I think Mark Mullett, just from regardless of where Republicans go, and I do think that there's a case to be made that unless things shift, and it's early, things can shift dramatically in the race. But if we don't have a candidate who can win, and we have to be honest about it for governor, I think you look towards a Mark Mullett, because on the issues that matter to us the most, homelessness, drugs, taxes, things like that, crime, he's on our side. Now, do I agree with him with that? No. Oh, no. He's very much on the he's not pro-abortion, he's pro-choice. There is a distinction there. I can appreciate one more than the other. I still disagree. He's pro-choice. He supported Senate Bill 5599, which I think is legalized kidnapping or state-sanctioned kidnapping of kids for gender identity purposes. But on the issues that matter most, he's on the right side. And if it's going to be between a moderate Democrat and a far, far, far to the left Democrat in Bob Ferguson, I want the moderate Democrat. But because I said that, and I've said it a few times now, Bob Ferguson, in a his latest attack against Mark Mullett, mentions me. And it is a email begging for donations, which has some spelling errors in it and missing indentations. They sent this out way too quickly. No one gave this the final approval before they sent it. I've got it screenshot right now at twitter.com/JasonRants. He writes, "Another Democratic candidate just entered the Washington governor's race. You decide if he's your kind of Democrat," end quotes. When asked during a 2022 interview whether he supported President Biden's reelection, he responded, "I think it would depend on who the Republican candidate was." He was the only Democrat to vote against protecting reproductive health data, a top legislative priority of pro-choice Washington. He opposed a $15 minimum wage for Washingtonians, including his own workers. And then my favorite one. MAGA conservative talk radio host Jason Rants plans to vote for this candidate. I don't think I've said I plan to vote for him.
I said I would
strongly consider voting for him. Yeah, if we don't have a viable Republican, yes, I plan to vote for him. If we don't have a viable Republican. If we do, and I've named a few who I think should run, I don't know if they're ever going to. Dave Reichert, I'm all in. If he announces he was our special guest at the Freedom Series for this very purpose, the second I mentioned his name, the crowd went nuts. Like the second because we didn't say that he was going to be there. It was a complete surprise. I think he can win. I would vote and back Dave Reichert. But in a world in which we legitimately don't have a shot in the world at winning, yes, at that point I would vote for Mark Mullett. MAGA conservative talk radio host. What in God's name are you talking about? MAGA conservative? What does that even mean anymore? Other than what it's become is just a crazy right winger. Right. They used to do this with like Tea Party, the Tea Party conservative. Like they're pretending like I'm some fringe Republican, MAGA conservative. What are you talking about, dude?
Well, what was your reaction when you saw this?
I laughed. I legitimately laughed.
Because this is great. Bob Ferguson calling you out by name. That's awesome.
I legitimately, two people sent it to me. The first person who sent this to me, I didn't even catch it. I just kind of looked it over and was like, okay, whatever. I didn't understand what it was. Then I got it a second time forwarded to me. And then I was like, wait a minute, but what am I missing? And then I read it, I was like, oh, they called me a MAGA conservative. And by the way, if you're going to say I plan to do something, at least source that. Give a link. Give a link back to one of our audio clips. I've never actually said what they
claim. Do you
want
me to send them a clip?
Yeah, can we just say, hey, could you include this link in your next lame, thirsty attack ad? Because we think it's funny, but we also want to get some of the links. I would love a little bit of the click. Because, we get bonused on our numbers. You can contribute to that. And Bob, by the way, we'll give you more material if you want. I think that this is promotion. I found this funny. Now, another big story locally that might not mean a lot to some people, but Caleb Heimlich, the Washington State chair of the Republican Party, the pride of Puyallup, he announced today that he is stepping down. He is the youngest state, one of the youngest state chairs in the entire country. He's only 37 years old. Which just depresses the hell out of me because I'm 41, man. And he says he's stepping down because he wants to spend some time with his family. But there's a little bit of a hint where he's open to a race, meaning he's open to run for something. Now, he's not going to run for statewide office, but maybe he's someone who steps up and runs on a House seat or a Senate race. I don't know. I think he's in an impossible position, and I think whoever is the next leader is in a near impossible position. We are in a deeply, deeply, deeply blue state. That's the unfortunate reality. And I think he's done a great job in getting some infrastructure in place, setting up the tools we need and the strategies we need, including ballot harvesting, which is perfectly legal. I think his idea to have a convention in which one candidate is determined fairly early on who's going to get the endorsement, so we're not having 40 different candidates splitting the vote amongst Republicans. I think that that's a great idea. He hasn't gotten the results he's wanted because we live in a tough state, and we lost, frankly, some races that had great candidates. We were not dealing with a situation of having bad candidates. Simon Sefcik, great candidate. He ends up losing. We've had some really good ones. We lost to Clyde Shavers. That's because we're in a deeply blue state. And so whomever takes the position and whomever steps into this race, because they vote on it at the party level, we'll reach out to everyone, have them come on and explain how they would do things a little bit better. How would they do things to get us to a point in which we do win some more races in what seems like a very, very difficult environment. So I look forward to those conversations. And I also look forward, just real quickly, tomorrow we have a big announcement. It's vaguely tied to this, kind of, thematically, I guess. I posted on Facebook saying that I had a big announcement today, and everyone was like, are you leaving? I literally, in the comment, I say, I'm not leaving. I'm not leaving KTTH. And still, don't leave. I just said,
well, maybe
I'm not,
they thought that was a ruse.
But why would I lie about that?
I don't know. For attention.
You're surprised I'm leaving. No, I'm not leaving anywhere. This is good news. It's positive news. And I look forward to telling it to you tomorrow. If you don't already, follow me on social media and you'll get a heads up. 1-800-465-8770 if you text the keyword RANTS.
The interview.
Anytime you go after George Soros, rightly go after him, you are called an anti-Semite by some folks on the left who suddenly have determined themselves to be pro-Israel and big supporters of Jews. While they're not supporting a quote-unquote free Palestine, they're apparently calling all of us anti-Semites, including Jews who criticize George Soros and the way he uses his money. That prompted a new group to form, Jews Against Soros. Their website is JewsAgainstSoros.com, and it was co-founded by my friend Josh Hammer from Newsweek. Welcome back to the show.
Jason, always a pleasure. Hope you've been well.
So obviously some of the claims of anti-Semitism irked you enough to start this organization, but was there a moment that it was just like, enough is enough, we got to do something?
You know, it's funny. There wasn't necessarily one single moment. I mean, I think last year, so I live here in Florida, of course, and last year Ron DeSantis had his tussle with Andrew Warren, the Soros-funded prosecutor in Tampa, and then Marco Rubio chimed into that debate shortly thereafter. They were both called anti-Semitic for condemning Soros-funded prosecutors. Elon Musk obviously found himself in hot water recently for the same. But, you know, there really wasn't one single incident. It kind of started, Jason, as so many good things often do, as somewhat of just a joke. I mean, my friend Will Sharp and I, we co-founded this. Will and I have very similar backgrounds. We're both strong Jewish conservatives, lawyers, clerks for conservative judges, very tough on crime, pro-law and order, very anti, you know, bail reform, criminal justice reform, skeptical, stuff like that. And we just had enough. I mean, it was just a series of data points really kind of just piling up. And it was time for some Jews who have some sort of public-facing presence to put their names behind some sort of effort like this and just try to provide cover so that good pro-rule of law, pro-law and order conservatives, Republicans, or even Democrats, it doesn't matter what party you are, anyone should be able to legitimately criticize George Soros. So that was really kind of the impetus. And honestly, we've gotten just – such a high number of emails and messages so far. So we know that we're onto something, I think.
Yeah, and look, there certainly have been anti-Semitic attacks against George Soros just from anti-Semites. The difference is simply, to your point, calling out how he spends his money and his impact is not anti-Semitic in the least. And it certainly wasn't anti-Semitic when the left did it with Sheldon Anderson, who's also Jewish, but happens to be conservative, and he spent his money in ways that folks on the left found to be disturbing, the way that we find George Soros money to be disturbing. I think it's a silly comparison between the two, frankly, but it's weird that when they criticize spending, it's okay, but when conservatives do, it's not.
Yeah, totally. I mean, the left can't have it both ways. I mean, Sheldon Adelson was a major, major donor to Republican Party, conservative, pro-Israel, Zionist causes, and you know, I mean, Jason, I'm old enough to remember when during the 2012 and 2016 Republican presidential primaries, how, you know, the left-wing media had any number of articles and headlines calling out Adelson's purported pernicious influence in Republican circles. I kind of vaguely recall this one New York Times headline saying how all the candidates had to kiss Sheldon's ring, right? So the left can't have it both ways. I mean, you're either kind of condemning this as some sort of purported dog whistle or you're not. But, you know, I on the other hand, when it comes to Soros in particular, look, one thing that we point out on the Jews Against Soros website, you know, I talked briefly about kind of the so-called reform prosecutors that George Soros funds here, and he is the number one funder of these absolutely horrific prosecutors, which your audience there in Seattle needs no reminding mm-hmm. Of course. But Soros also funds a ton of anti-Jewish, anti-Israel yep. activism abroad. This is a very interesting point as well. I mean, Soros has donated – I think he's the number one donor in the entire history, if I'm not mistaken, of the organization J Street. And J Street calls itself a pro-Israel organization, but it's not. It's anything but that. It is an anti-Israel, pro-Palestinian organization that exists for the exclusive reason, the sole reason of giving Democrats political cover to bash Israel and to support the Palestinian cause. Soros-backed entities over in Israel have also been linked to the Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine, mm-hmm. which is an internationally recognized terrorist organization. You know, in fact, after Elon Musk recently criticized Soros and people said, oh, Elon Musk is anti-Semitic, it was actually Amichai Shikli, who's the Netanyahu government diaspora minister, who publicly defended Elon Musk. He basically said, no, actually, we don't like George Soros either. And in fact, you know, when Will Sharp and I, my co-founder, when we unveiled this project last week, I did a kind of a tweet thread unveiling it. And that same Israeli government minister, Amichai Shikli, liked all the tweets in my thread. So it's not anti-Semitic. It's this ridiculous, ridiculous double standard the left has. But the left has a lot of double standards, as you and I both know.
Yeah, no kidding. Real quickly, how do you refer to a George Soros or anyone who, you know, proclaims himself to be Jewish and yet constantly and almost exclusively speaks out against Israel's right to exist or supports like the BDS movement and stuff?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, and that is Soros, right? I mean, that is exactly what he is. I mean, look, you have free speech, Jews, Christians, everyone has free speech. I would never, ever try to infringe upon anyone's free speech rights. But the point is, Jason, especially when you're competing at Soros's level, the guy's worth billions of dollars. You know, his son, Alex Soros, who is basically running the Open Society Foundation these days, there was an article that I saw at Town Hall just last week. Alex Soros has visited the Biden White House like 17 times. I mean, his influence is everywhere. In all these countries. I mean, Soros is born in Hungary. The Hungarian government hates him. So when you're playing at that level, when you're spreading your wealth and your money that far and wide, you can be legitimately criticized no matter what your ethnic, racial, whatever is. That's the whole point.
The website is JewsAgainstSoros.com. Hope you'll check them out and support my friend Josh Hammer. Thank you so much for stopping by.
Anytime, Jason.
Now this.
The interview.
The five-year plan approved unanimously last week by the King County Regional Homelessness Authority, an authority that probably should not exist. In fact, with Mark Doan, the CEO, stepping aside, resigning, well, why does it still exist? My next guest says, well, no, it shouldn't. King County Councilmember Reagan Dunn, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me, Jason.
You, like so many others, not a fan of the King County Regional Homelessness Authority. Last week, I spoke with a Burien councilmember who took the same position I take, which is, why do we have them if they're unwilling to actually do the work that's necessary to clear the encampments?
Yeah, that's exactly right. Well, you know, it's been 4 years since we created that, and, you know, they were set up to do the tough things, get those camps out of the way, and get the homeless drug use off the streets, and get people in shelters, and none of that's happening. In fact, the problem is markedly worse since when they were set up, and so I'm calling for King County to back away from its agreement and go back to what it should be doing, which is making the tough decisions on its own.
Is that part of the reason why they punted to the King County Regional Homelessness Authority so there would be no political pushback from not sweeping encampments?
Yeah, I wrote an op-ed in the Seattle Times about in 2019 saying just that. Elected leaders need to make the tough choices and not punting it to a group of unelected bureaucrats and activists to do it. I mean, elected leaders like myself, we're supposed to make tough calls. That's exactly why we're hired to do that job. And if that means that somebody needs to be put into mental health treatment forcibly or substance use treatment in order to avoid a jail sentence or conditioned on that sort of work, conditioned on whether they get housing, we've got to make those tough choices. The problem here is that this new homeless governance authority is also politically too scared to make tough choices. Mm-hmm. And so it's the same problem. So you might as well have at least the people who are making the choices directly accountable to the voters and give it back to the elected leaders. That's where it should have been stayed in the first place.
Or I wonder if some of this is intentional, in that the longer you have a homelessness crisis, the longer you have job security. And while I don't think they are nefarious in keeping people out on the streets, I do wonder if there's some conscious bias towards rushing this and treating it like an urgency. I'm looking right now at a list of the top 30 salaries and it's their roles over there. And the assistant to the CEO makes $103,000. And I'm sure this assistant is a great assistant, but that is absolutely absurd.
Yeah, and some of those top folks are making over $200,000 a year. That's nearly unheard of in government. I mean, we were just looking. A one-star brigadier general makes about $100,000 a year. So compare that. Yeah, look, and what happens is you have this government now that has its own survival instinct, right? It wants to continue to perpetuate itself, which is going to be a problem. We're going to have to wrap that back and walk that back. And that's money spent on governance and not on actually helping homeless folks. But one of the other problems is if you buy 30,000 units of housing for chronically homeless, that's 30,000 units that young people should be buying, coming out of high school, college, who are working hard, you know, paying their dues. That whole housing stock will go out the door. And we already have a problem with housing around here. So the whole thing is this housing first model doesn't work. It's never going to work until we start addressing the issues of substance use disorders, addiction, mental health treatment, job training, et cetera.
Is there any indication that there is another voice on your council that supports dismantling the KCRHA?
Interestingly, Dave Updegrove, Democrat, voted against the creation when it first started. Mm-hmm. So there may be already three votes against it. And if you get two more, then King County withdraws and the party's over. Then it's basically a Seattle thing. And, you know, I guess if Seattle wants to do what it wants to do, that's fine. Until the King County Regional Homeless Authority pivots from housing first, from buying every homeless person a single occupancy residence and starts to address the underlying cause of homelessness, this thing is only going to get worse. It's going to be more embarrassing for the group. There'll be more resignations, and it just won't work. They've got to change their whole approach if they want to survive.
How nervous are you that the council might be even farther to the left? You have Seattle City Councilman Teresa Mosqueda going after an open seat. It would be a progressive replacing a progressive, but Mosqueda is way farther to the left.
Yeah, and that creates a situation where, you know, if you have one or two council members like Sawant who, you know, are, you know, in that sort of democratic socialist or socialist frame, it tends to pull the rest of the Democrats over to the left. So, yeah, I am worried about it. But from my perspective, I'm just going to keep shouting common sense from the rooftops. And obviously it resonated today, because boy, folks are really interested in the idea of rolling that homeless authority back into the government and getting rid of this unnecessary bureaucracy that has been created.
Well, fingers crossed. It is a nightmare of an organization. It's been a total and complete failure. The fact that we're throwing more money into it is absolutely absurd. King County Councilmember Reagan Dunn, thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, Jason.
Absolutely. Now this.
Did you know that the average amount of time that a doctor spends talking to their patient is about 5 minutes and 22 seconds? That's crazy. It's no wonder you're not happy with your health care. Hi, Lynette here from Longevity Medical Clinics, where the doctors will spend an hour with you, a full hour, talking about your health care and concerns. Since 1998, the doctors at Longevity Medical Clinic have been helping their patients stay on the leading edge of health care and understand some of the options that are available. And of course, at Longevity Medical Clinic, they're still offering that free health analysis appointment, which includes two tests to determine your risks for things like diabetes, heart disease, sexual dysfunction, dementia, and more. If you're not happy with your health care, schedule that free health analysis appointment right now at lmclinic.com. That's lmclinic.com.
Hey, it's Jason Rantz here for Alpine Specialty Services, reminding you now is the perfect time to schedule your service for an air duct cleaning. For those of you who haven't cleaned your air ducts for a while and you're getting ready to turn on that AC more and more often, maybe you're already doing it, you are just pushing out dust, debris, pet hair, odors, maybe even mold that's been building up in those air ducts over the last several months to maybe several years. When was the last time you had them cleaned? Go with Alpine Specialty Services and you will save $75 off your next air duct cleaning. That's some serious savings right there. They've been in business for over 50 years. They've got over 9,000 five-star online reviews. It's no wonder why Alpine's reputation is second to none. I've gone with Alpine Specialty Services. I recommend you do the same. Head on over to alpineclean.com, schedule your service, and mention KTTH. Alpine's air duct cleaning services are the best around. Let them prove it to you. alpineclean.com.
The Jason Rantz Show.
Here to react, Seattle talk radio host Jason Rantz.
And the rise of soft-on-crime laws and policies have made it worse.
Our man in the Pacific Northwest, Jason Rantz, is on that.
And you keep on bringing us these extraordinary stories from Seattle. It's amazing.
Long form.
Another Democrat has announced he's running for governor, State Senator Mark Mullett, a Democrat from Issaquah, certainly by Washington standards, very much a moderate, which means in order for him to get to the general, he's likely going to need the support of Republicans. And he joins me now. Welcome back to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me back on, Jason. I appreciate it.
Is it fair to say that a key strategy for you to advance is to win over some actual Republicans as you're going up, not just against Bob Ferguson, but also Hillary Franz and maybe whomever else announces?
I'm not conceding any Democratic votes to Bob Ferguson, because I think I stood up for a lot of those Democratic values around women's reproductive rights and support of the LGBT community. But I think there's a lot of Democrats like myself who feel that our party can do a lot better when it comes to public safety, when it comes to affordable housing, when it, you know, comes to taxes. So I kind of am not ready to concede any of those voters, because I think there is a lot of Democrats who are similar to me, where they like some of those core values I support, but are agreeing with the fact that I challenge our party to do better on those three issues.
Yeah, but certainly a Seattle progressive would likely choose Bob Ferguson over you, correct? I mean, you would concede that.
I think that's probably a fair statement. I don't think the stranger voters are going to break my way. But, you know, the stranger voters wanted to decriminalize drugs. And obviously that has not been my position on the other side of that fight. And so that's the way it goes.
Well, so how do you make the argument to Democrats who are going to be bombarded with attack after attack after attack ad on you? I mean, the day you announced, there was already an attack ad put out by the Ferguson supporters.
Which I thought was kind of hilarious. That he obviously had to film that in advance ready to launch, which makes me think he was a little nervous about it. And I think the advantage I have is I actually have a voting record on those core issues that we're talking about, right? So women's reproductive rights, I have 100% voting record. LGBTQ support, I have 100% voting record. I can point to my voter record. I'm the only candidate who actually has one supporting those issues. Yes, you were making accurate statements. I oppose the long-term care payroll tax. I was very vocal. My opposition to that tax, I remain opposed to it. Yes, that's created a lot of political misery for me, but I can live with that. And I think at the end of the day, I got out of my last tough race. I won my tough race previously to that. Like, I've always had tough Senate races. And I think the things I stand up and fight for are actually the thing most Washington residents want to see me fighting for.
Well, what do you think is going to be the defining issue of this campaign? There always seems to be at least one.
I think public safety is going to be a big issue. I think there's a lot of folks who feel we should have more neighborhoods in the state of Washington where families feel safe. And I think we can get that right. And I think affordable housing is going to be right behind it. It's not just, it's how long it takes to build housing. I mean, we have to be intellectually honest with ourselves that the government's made it really difficult to get a permit to build a lot of the things we actually need to build. So we're responsible for driving up a lot of this pricing, and we can also fix that if we're smarter about it going forward.
But you would have to make significant cuts to services in Washington state if we were to have gone your route of saying no to certain taxes, including the capital gains tax. So what are you willing to cut? What do you think needs to, or at least spending needing to be reined in?
Well, I look at, when I got elected, so this was in 2012, was my first election, we wrote a $34 billion budget. The budget we signed a few weeks ago that we passed was $69 billion. So in the space of 10 years, the state budget went from $34 billion to $69 billion. And I can say, as a small business owner, if I had that kind of revenue growth, I think you can actually do a lot of smart investments. And there was actually the opportunity along the way to, I think, provide some tax relief in a thoughtful way for Washington families, specifically around, I think, property taxes. And so I actually think you can do all of that without – it's just how you're going to have revenue growth in the state of Washington going forward. It's just a question of when you have that revenue growth, how you choose to invest those extra dollars. And I don't think it's cutting programs. I just think it's smarter financial thinking in the future.
It seems like a lot of the programs, though, that we're funding, at least in large part, you're seeing a lot of dollars going into this diversity, equity, and inclusion space for training, for, I mean, we have a Department of Equity now, and that's new just from a couple years ago. Is that necessary? Do we still need to, from a Washington Democrat perspective, push the DEI agenda?
Well, I think you have to, I think a lot of these things you can support and push. It's just a question of, does it need to have, like, what's the amount of actual financial resources you need to support those things? Because you can have those core values without spending a lot of money on those, specifically in some of those cases. And so I think there is a chance going forward to be much more thoughtful about what we do when we have extra revenue growth in the state of Washington. But I think it's getting out of the silo thinking of, like, public safety normally is at the city and county level. So when we had surpluses in our state budget in 21 from the federal money and from the higher sales tax receipts when inflation kicked in, like, we have to actually say, well, this is a core government service, public safety. We should probably do a better job of sharing some of our state revenue with cities and counties to focus on public safety instead of just saying, oh, well, that's their problem. They'll have to go create a new tax to solve it. I think we can have a different way of thinking in Olympia that actually leads to better results for Washington residents.
State Senator Mark Mullett joining me on the line. He's a Democrat from Issaquah. He's running for governor against Bob Ferguson. Of course, you also have Republicans in the race and Dr. Raul Garcia and Semi Byrd. I said at the beginning, you are going to need, and there's no doubt you don't have to concede any Democrat votes, but you do have to win over some Republicans to ensure that all the Republican voters just don't coalesce behind a Republican candidate. You've got some, you know, positions on your record on you call them LGBT rights. I'm actually a member of the LGBT community. I don't view them, what you're talking about, necessarily as rights. I think your stance on abortion, for example, is going to be very problematic to social conservatives. So what is the pitch to Republican voters?
I think it's that I'm not a political windsock. I've been really consistent my entire time in office, and the issues that a lot of those Republican voters care about, public safety and taxes and being smarter about the level of business regulations. The Republicans that have voted for me in my three previous Senate races, it's because I've always been very vocal on those issues. And I think it'll be the same in a statewide race. You're right. They probably wish I was different on some of these other social issues, but I've never pretended otherwise. I've been very upfront with Republican voters my entire time in office. Like, they know I support that stuff, but I also have been extremely consistent in my opposition to unnecessary tax increases. And that's been really important to them. And I think at the end of the day, they're like, well, it's nice to at least have a Democrat there who does support some of those values I really do care about.
Do you anticipate, let's say you are elected governor, do you think that that would mean the state legislature would have a different makeup as well if they're willing to go for someone who's, you know, considerably more moderate than a Bob Ferguson, that would trickle down into the House or the Senate?
You know, I didn't thought much about that question. That's a tough one to predict. I don't see the legislative numbers changing in the 24 election cycle, if I'm being really honest. I think you'll still have fairly large Democratic majorities. I think as governor, my whole focus would be, it's better public policy when you have broader support. If rural and urban communities support it, if Eastern and Western Washington side of the mountains support it, you end up with better policy. And my job as governor would be to force people to sit in the room until they can find that common agreement and you get better bills.
Has that been happening now with Jay Inslee? It seems like he's rather disconnected from negotiations.
That's one of the reasons why I'm running. I've been to a lot of these policy breakfasts at the governor's mansion, and I look around, I don't see folks from the rural communities. I don't see folks from Eastern Washington. It's sometimes an echo chamber at these things. And that's what I'm going to change if I'm in that governor's mansion seat, where I'm going to make sure you have rural and urban voices as you're going through these public policy debates.
Well, Bob Ferguson is basically saying the same thing, that he's going to consider folks on the east side of the state. So how do you push back against that? I mean, he's on this tour. He's going into individual counties.
So I've been in the middle this whole session, in the middle of the bill to allow police to pursue criminals who try to run away from them, in the middle of the bill to make sure we don't go the way of Oregon and decriminalize drugs. Those are the two biggest public safety issues. And I can tell you that's what people in Eastern Washington really cared about. Both of those issues and rural communities really cared about. And Bob didn't lift a finger on either of those issues. I was fighting that fight the whole 105-day legislative session plus the special session. And I never saw anything from him on these issues. And these are the issues people really cared about. And so that's going to be a huge distinction between us.
Well, one thing we're hearing from the Attorney General's office about today is that we will all be paying $3 million to settle a lawsuit against the state of Washington concerning that case of a woman who was allegedly mistreated at an adult family home. There was a very stinging rebuke from a judge in this case about how documents, discoverable documents, were withheld by the state. It showed incredible incompetence and, I would argue, nefarious intent from the AG's office. That's on top of the $300,000 in penalties. That is not a good look for this attorney general.
Hey, I didn't have to run an attack ad for that one. I had nothing to do with that. That just happened on its own.
But, I mean, doesn't that give you a sense of where his priorities are? It's not necessarily on serving the interests of the law. It's always seemed to be serving his interests as a future gubernatorial candidate.
Yeah, I think it's very clear that Bob Ferguson has been running for governor for probably the last 10 years. I've been running for governor for less than 10 days now. So it's, I think there's a real contrast there. But I'm in this race. I'm giving voters a chance for change. I mean, I'll be the first small business owner. In the last 30 years, every governor's been a lawyer. So small business owner, I can tell you, I'm good at creating jobs. I'm good at finding ways to balance the budget by finding savings, not raising taxes.
Yeah. There you go. Mark Mullett is running for governor. He hopes to get your support. He also hopes to get your donations. Look him up online. Be able to donate if you so choose. Mark Mullett, thank you so much for stopping by.
Hey, thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Of course. You're listening to The Jason Rant Show.
The Jason Rant Show.
Let's bring in our man in the Pacific Northwest, KTTH, Seattle talk radio host Jason Rantz. Great to have you with us to tell people a little bit more about this.
Jason Rantz is in focus now.
Jason Rantz, thank you for your reporting on that.
The quick hit.
You know, I just talked with Mark Mullett about DE&I, diversity, equity, and inclusion. Obviously, when talking to him, it's focused on the governmental aspect of this movement, this ideology that I deeply believe to be based in racist left-wing positions. Not always. In fact, there used to be a time where when we used the term just equity or diversity, it meant something completely different than what it means now. And what you have happening on the private sector side is you had all of these businesses moving forward in sort of the light of BLM and the George Floyd killing. They came out and said, look, we are going to reinvest in our DEI work. And depending on the company, it meant different things. Sometimes it meant bringing on some VP of, I don't know, equity and inclusion. They sometimes just flat out say diversity, equity, inclusion director, but sometimes the inclusion director, as if that even means anything. It really doesn't. But you had all these different people who were hired to run various departments. And for the most part, it meant providing training to staff members on anti-racist work. And again, that's another term that doesn't actually mean what it used to donate money, would come up with a board that would donate money to various groups. And I always got the impression, again, depending on the corporation, they either just did it because they had to. It was one of those expectations coming from the, at least what they thought was coming from the societal push at large, a societal push at large, meaning this is now the expectation from consumers, or at least the consumers that we think shop with us or hire us. We have to do this, selling whatever. Let's just say we're doing it, just give some money to some group. And a lot of times they just gave it to BLM. And that was obviously a mistake. Good news is they are pretty much near bankruptcy. Certainly from an impact level, they've got no power as an organization. The movement itself with activists different, but the actual group, Black Lives Matter, has just been a total bust. But you had some that just kind of gave money and didn't really pay attention. And I saw this story from Fox News in their and their investigation team, and they looked at Target because let's just completely jump on Target some more because of their LGBT trans, mostly trans issue with kids. They have been at the forefront of the boycotts or at least some of the criticisms. And they said that they had accelerated its DEI program after BLM started. They hired a, in this case, it was called a diversity chief, Kira Fernandez. But looking at who she is, we're getting a better sense of who's making decisions for DEI over at Target. She apparently has demanded that, quote unquote, white women will get to work to combat systemic racism in this country. Fox News Digital reports they found that Target, via its nonprofit foundation, which has been directed by the retail giant's senior corporate treasurers, funded a grantee pushing to shut down and give away U.S. sovereign land such as Mount Rushmore, believing it to be an international symbol of white supremacy and to demilitarize the quote-unquote violent U.S. military. The same grantee also supports the destruction of Israel's Jewish character through what it is calling the Palestinian Law of Return, implementing economic warfare tactics against the Jewish state, such as boycotts and sanctions as part of the BDS movement, to quote-unquote free Palestine. Now, another Target Foundation grantee said parents must teach specifically white children about systemic racism and to quote-unquote see color. It claimed that capitalism maintained a role in perpetuating racism. Now, if you go to their website, the Target Foundation's website, you will see where a lot of the money has gone. And specifically, they funded something called the NDN Collective, and this was last year. It's a South Dakota-based nonprofit that has a revenue stream that's already reached $50 million, according to its 2021 tax filing. And they say they're open about operating within a, quote, racial equity lens, that they're, quote, dedicated to building indigenous power through organizing, activism, philanthropy, grant making, and narrative change. Now, they say over at Fox News that NDN, this group, identifies as, quote unquote, intersectional, which basically means they understand that America has these structurally racist and misogynistic systems, and they can sometimes intersect in a way that impacts people differently based on their own identities. And we've talked about this a lot, actually, on this show, the sort of intersectional checklist that folks on the left will look at to see when there's two competing groups against one another coming from, quote unquote, marginalized communities. They're able to compete against one another, and the more checks they have and their progressive identities, the more victimized they view this group. So if it's someone who's a black woman versus a Asian woman, they'll side with the black woman as being more marginalized because they have less privileges than the Asian woman. If it's someone who's a black woman versus a black lesbian woman, then all of a sudden the black lesbian gets more points. That's how they look at it. This particular group goes through that lens, which is why they've got a campaign, I guess, called Land Back. They say the closure of Mount Rushmore, this is what they're demanding. The closure of Mount Rushmore, return of that land and all public lands in the Black Hills, South Dakota, is our cornerstone battle. Not only does Mount Rushmore sit in the heart of the sacred Black Hills, but it's an international symbol of white supremacy and colonization. To truly dismantle white supremacy and systems of oppression, we have to go back to the roots, which for us is putting indigenous lands back in indigenous hands. And it goes on and on and on. It's also deeply anti-Semitic, this group. So here's a question I have. Because I acknowledge it in this segment, I believe a lot of corporations just did what they thought they had to and frivolously selected different organizations to back without doing any of their homework. I also believe that they hired a whole bunch of far-left activists to run these departments within their corporations. Again, because they just had to, and this was the easiest thing for them to do to be a part of some sort of societal movement, in that case, BLM. Do you think Target did this intentionally? Or do you think that this is an example of willy-nilly just closing your eyes and selecting some random group to virtue signal to the hardcore leftists who made this demand? Not that the end result is any better, but I do think intent matters in the sense of, if they made a mistake and it wasn't their intent, well, they can fix it. But if they intended to give money to a group like this and to other groups, and again, it's not even just Target, just look at it across the board, any of these companies who did this. If their intent was to give it to the crazies, well, then they're not going to undo that. They're not going to reverse course unless there's some sort of societal pressure to do that. But ultimately, we're talking about a movement that's driven by ideology, so I don't expect that they will change directions. But Target is one of those weird companies where right now it finds itself right in the middle of the culture wars. It got hit with another today. It got hit with another downgrade notice. They're hitting near a 3-year low, having lost $12.4 billion in market value. But now KeyBank Capital Markets today cut their shares to overweight. And they're saying that this is no longer that company you should be pouring any kind of investment money into. So I'm curious where you stand. Send me a text, 1-800-465-8770. You're listening to The Jason Rand Show.